Tickets. Tickets, please. Step inside, take a ride upon the terror train. All aboard, be forewarned, these rails house fear and pain. Find a seat, don't mind the heat, just pray the lights stay on. Upon these rails, these bloody rails, in darkness lies no dawn. Yes, step inside, come crawl or glide. With us, you shall remain. Upon this ride, this hellish ride, we call the Terror Train. Ticket, please. James Ward Kirk Publications presents Terror Train, Episode 110, New York to Memphis.
Welcome aboard. Welcome to my home. I am the disembodied voice, your ghost host, so to speak. Call me Terror. Welcome to my train. Be you dead, undead, or of the living. Tonight, the doors seal permanently behind our most recent passage. Heading toward Memphis, Tennessee. Quite interesting are these two who chose our rails. So unaware, escape is futile.
Ticket, please. Training, the Unfortunate by Jim Goforth. 18 hours on a train wasn't exactly what Sloane would call a good time, but it wasn't the worst kind of torture he'd subjected himself to. It was a step up from bouncing around in the back of an old pickup truck that smelled of straw and pig shit, or hitching along lonely highways with rides few and far between. So he supposed he could deal with it. The most imperative thing was that he was leaving New York City far behind him and getting himself ensconced deep in Memphis. Another place to reinvent himself and sweep the indiscretions under the carpet. Bury another pile of bones from his past. He'd opted for a sleeper, but, as usual, sleeping was going to be nearly impossible. The Amtrak traversed the countryside smoothly enough, but it was a case of jolts and bumps from pillar to post on a clattering behemoth rolling roughshod on miles of steel track. It was more to do with too much bad train station coffee and eagerness to put distance between himself and the big, rotten apple. Besides, Sloane just couldn't get accustomed to the idea of sleeping around other people, having them in the vicinity, having the knowledge that so many others were aboard this train. Having his own room or suite didn't alleviate his natural suspicions. It didn't prevent him from staying on guard at all times, and it didn't chase away thoughts that, were he to drift off to sleep, he would be nabbed. When he was a child, trains fascinated Sloane. He loved them, found them entrancing. He always envisioned them as gigantic steel dragons, spellbound by the tracks they rode on, consigned to remain flightless, locked in thrall upon the steel they rode. They transported people from place to place, but not allowed to roam freely, but cursed to remain on the same route eternally, back and forth, their steel wings clipped. He always knew that whatever wizard had cast a spell to keep them track-bound had done so for the benefit of those passengers who rode not on the backs of the beast, but deep in its belly. For whenever these creations broke free of the tracks, it meant only calamity and destruction for those souls riding in the innards. As he grew up, those childish notions and fantasies morphed to jaded views of trains. His life painfully mapped out for him, the set of tracks he consigned himself to follow by his actions, ensured he was in constant need of travel. Hence, his familiarity with trains of all sorts bled the fantasy out of his childhood and leached any of the magic his brain conjured up back then. There were no steel dragons. They were more like caged domestic entities confined to a life of servitude, the tracks they rode on limiting where they could go. There was no utter freedom, just a specific route. The steel tracks were nothing more than a house arrest bracelet to let the authorities know where they were at all times. So, instead of sleeping in the sleeper car in the bunk he'd reserved, or even attempting to, Sloane wandered. Instead of dwelling on childhood thoughts of steel beasts confined to the land until they tried to break free, mutilate themselves, and kill all those inside them, he wandered. Roy Acuff's Night Train to Memphis looped through his head, an inane, incessant cycle. This annoyed him, though it was an appropriate song to have wedged inside one's mind, but it wasn't a song he particularly enjoyed. He had no beef with the king of country music, not personally. He just would have preferred something like Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train, Guns N' Roses' Night Train, or hell, even Aerosmith's rendition of Train Kept a Rollin' take up residence in his brain. Acuff's track just reminded him of his father, the drunken, abusive son of a bitch who Sloane could credit with teaching him everything he knew about lying, stealing, cheating, violence, and devious dealings. The guy who was solely responsible for the way Sloane lived his life now, ducking and dodging, shifting from city to city every time the heat started to come down. The guy who'd instilled in him all the requisite tools to lead a life of crime.
Still, Sloan lamented, it was easy to blame a no-good sack of shit who'd long ago turned up his toes. All of Sloan's choices were his own, regardless of how bad they were, or how deeply his old man ingrained poor career decisions in him. The latest bad decision had Sloan on the night train to Memphis in an effort to escape the consequence of a dead stripper in his rented apartment in NYC and a snowstorm of cocaine, a murky swamp of circumstances he had zero recollection of. So he wandered around the train. Had he any sort of patience or ability to merely sit still, he guessed he could have been doing like some of his fellow passengers, staring out at the landscape rolling by. But he didn't have any inclination to do so. It was on par with trying to sleep, or to read, or listen to music, or any of those mundane things these drones were in the process of doing to while away the hours. For a start, it was as dark as fuck out there. Even if he had the slightest interest to goggle undulating plains or rolling hills, or wooded forests, industrial estates, nondescript country towns, assorted gatherings of devious and potentially dangerous would-be rail riders assembling around blazes built in giant metal barrels, or whatever the fuck might be out there as the train sliced through, rolling on its steel tether around the country. He wouldn't be able to see squat. Not until they came through some illuminated areas of civilization. He'd be more likely to gaze blankly at his reflection in the train window for the better part of 18 hours, or at least until fatigue finally gripped its claws into him. He started head-banging against the safety glass, jerking himself wide awake and having to start the whole ridiculous cycle over again. As for looking at his reflection, he wasn't keen on that either. That meant seeing all the ghosts of dead girls in his eyes. Deja fucking vu. This exotic dancer back on the East Coast was the latest in the long line of incidents, chasing him, making him run, and apparently not being able to remain in one place before something else cropped up, and he wouldn't be able to remember shit. Just knowing he'd somehow done it again and tallied up some more deceased females. Damn, they followed him around, like the ghost whisperer. The drugs. It had to be the drugs. Forget these phantasmagorical juvenile notions of clipped wings, steel-trained dragons, enchanted to ride the rails by some imagined sorcerer. The penchant for drugs, passed down from his deadbeat dad, was more like it. There were some genuine dragons right there. Seems like the more he chased those dragons, the more spectral women chased him. Speaking of which, he pondered, as he strode unchecked throughout the train, whether he might in some way still be high, possibly perpetually high. The train was the weirdest fucking train he'd ever had the misfortune to be on. He found nothing uniform about the carriages he wandered through. One minute it appeared as though he was on a standard passenger train, seats sporadically filled by blank-faced passengers, or sleeping ones, heads bobbing against windows in their slumbers, others immersed in newspapers, or wearing headphones as they occupied their time with music, some eating. The next minute it felt as though he were trailing down the center aisle of a subway train, swinging his way along on steel poles. One carriage he strolled through was completely devoid of seats and passengers whatsoever. Totally empty, in fact. Just a vacant boxcar. He had to be in some sort of drug-induced haze. How else could he explain himself trapped in a goddamn circus train? He sure as hell couldn't recall the train being like this when he'd boarded in New York. But possibly, back then, he had still been as high as a kite and running on a heady brew of adrenaline and fear. The only theme he could pinpoint was the abundance of stickers and advertisements, billboard type, emblazoned throughout every carriage he traipsed through. All essentially referring to the same thing. The same motto or catch cry, slogan, whatever the fuck it was meant to be. Training the unfortunate. Helping the homeless feed themselves. There were others in a similar vein. more references to the homeless, things about feeding and clothing them, but predominantly it was that one slogan throughout the carriages. Even bizarrely, the empty boxcar, which were devoid of anything but stickers plastered upon Spartan walls, looking incongruous and rather out of place. Sloane was actually surprised there wasn't some filthy vagrant curled up in a corner of that bare boxcar, wrapped in a newspaper blanket, sucking on a cheap-ass bottle of booze, swaddled in a brown paper bag. Fucking homeless hobos. That was another blessing about leaving New York. Technically, leaving the big rotten apple wasn't a blessing, but a necessity, a requirement. Something he had to do to keep outrunning the trail of mystery bodies he was leaving from California to Texas. At least there was a silver lining to the heavy thundercloud. Avoiding the homeless, the beggars, the bums. New York City, riddled with the filth-encrusted mutants in clothes so stiff with grime and trash, begging for a couple of bucks for a cup of coffee, a bite to eat, a smoke. Trolls, hobos, dirty deviant vagrants skulking in alleys, lurking and loitering around the subways, sprawling on the sidewalks, clustered in the parks. They came out at night, too, sometimes in packs, harassing anyone in their single-minded pursuits. Sloane was accosted many times. He'd made sure they saw things his way, and left him well the fuck alone when he was done with them. He'd been down on his luck plenty of times. He'd traveled some rough roads, but he never stooped to begging and groveling on the streets, seeking the kindness of strangers. Random strangers possessed no kindness, and he knew that only too well. So he would never resort to those sorts of desperate measures to obtain money, or whatever it was he needed. That was beneath him. He took what he wanted, what he needed. Fuck the homeless, filthy trolls. They brought it upon themselves. He'd seen them feeding themselves, out of dumpsters, rubbish. And only because the money they'd wangled out of some stupid simpletons too foolish to see through their devious ruses went straight on booze. Just like his goddamn infernal father. That piece of shit was no better. Why the hell would the government, or whoever the fuck was responsible for this cornucopia of advertisements, be pushing some sort of assistance program to help these lowly bums learn to feed and clothe themselves? That sort of thing was a set of life skills they should have learned long ago. Sloane would be very happy to take whatever big bucks shoveled out of this campaign to teach, or rather, train, as the advertisement proclaimed, these grime-riddled, begging bastards a thing or two about how to further themselves and obtain what they needed in life. "Take, don't beg," Sloane announced aloud. "That's my goddamn motto. Helping the homeless feed themselves, my ass." He trailed through to another compartment, another entity resembling the subway trains he thought he'd left behind in New York. This one was remarkably full, seats facing outwards, with people occupying them all along the length of the carriage. Sloane shook his head in disbelief, halting just inside the door he'd wandered through, unable to comprehend why there were so many different composites to this train. This carriage looked almost as though it was rolling through NYC in peak hour, ferrying this conglomeration of passengers to their various menial office jobs in the high-rise business blocks and so forth. It sure as fuck didn't look as though it belonged on a passenger-laden Amtrak, trekking across the country on a journey that almost accounted for one whole day. Neither did any of the boxcars, freight train entities, and other things he'd come through. What the actual fuck was this? Had he even left New York after all, only trapped in a hallucinatory delusion, a drug-addled nightmare, where his fevered imagination was playing complete tricks on him? It sure felt as real as could be. Those same billboard posters and stickers were here too, stuck in amidst the random product advertisements and train information. "Hey," he addressed the nearest person, a nondescript man with spectacles, tousled hair, and bleary eyes, squeezed into a seat alongside a corpulent person of indeterminable sex. You know where this train is going? The final destination is Memphis, Tennessee, the guy responded after a protracted silence, during which he gazed at Sloane with those tired eyes, as if trying to gauge how genuine the inquiry was. There's a bunch of stops along the way, though. You don't find it a little fucking weird that you're riding a subway train? Or rather, this carriage here belongs on a goddamn subway train. Aren't you a little damn uncomfortable? 18 fucking hours is a long time to sit on those ass-numbing seats right there. No, the guy replied tiredly, and shaking his head in disgust and wonderment. Sloane kept moving. Shit, I thought I was fucking high. These people take the cake there. Who the hell ever thought of riding a subway train all the way like this? At least he was on the right track. He wasn't delusional or off his head. He genuinely was leaving New York City far behind him, but there was still some weird shit going on. He glanced with disdain at others cramped on their seats as he stalked along the center aisle. Then he froze mid-stride as he noticed something odd. Something incredibly odd. He hadn't really paid enough attention to the first man he'd addressed with his brusque question, but those he looked at now were not on those uncomfortable seats by choice. Wrists and ankles were tightly bound by chains, links encircling their extremities and railings, parts of the seats. Every single one he was gazing upon was chained to a seat, unable to move away. And yet, they were all so placid, docile, blank of expression, as if they were virtually clueless, lacking all knowledge of these restraints around them. Do you people realize you are chained to the fucking seats? Sloane raised his voice in a shout, which echoed all the way down the hallway and rebounded back to him. Do you even know? A chorus of disapproval hissed back to him, people urging him to be quiet, move it along, let people sleep. A general round of displeasure, not at their predicaments, but instead at his choice to shout aloud in the middle of the night. In a fog of disbelief, Sloane exited the carriage hastily, running now, away from it altogether, wrenching the hydraulic doors open and leaving that lunacy behind. Now he knew it was the drug screwing up his head completely. He might not be high, but hell, he didn't really need to be anymore. His misfiring synapses, his burnt-out, drug-scrambled brain, was making him go insane without the need to indulge any more recently than his last New York bender. The next carriage he found himself in was more what he expected. This was the standard passenger train car again, with all of the seats facing the front of the train, items built for relative comfort to accommodate passengers on a lengthy journey like this. It wasn't quite as full or crowded as it had been in the previous freakish one he'd bolted in consternation from. Though there seemed to be a disproportionate number of people here, more than he would have imagined. He slipped into one of the vacant seats at the rear of the carriage, breathing hard, trying to clear the fog from his head. He felt perspiration bead on his forehead, the drug sweat oozing out of him now. People chained, affixed to their seats of discomfort, yet displaying no obvious signs of distress. Nothing but fatigue or docile sleepiness evident in their eyes. Sloane shook his head so furiously his hair flapped around his face, showering him in drops of perspiration. He sank back in the seat, temporarily enjoying the sensation of being off his feet, though in reality, his trek through the handful of carriages hadn't taken that long. It hadn't been more than several long minutes since he was last sitting down. All the same, the journey to get here had been mentally exhausting and damn confusing. He felt like he was back on an even keel. This was reality, keeping him grounded now. This carriage was normality. The rest of that shit must have been all in his head. A stupid parade of hallucinations brought on by fatigue married to excessive drug intake, shot through with panic and confusion, and the whole shock of what he was running from, once again. All these passengers, filling the seats here, were normal. They were acting like any other folks on an extended journey, passing the time with expected pursuits and relative comfort, as opposed to that bizarre situation in the carriage he'd just left, where, obviously, everything he'd witnessed were figments of a fevered imagination. Same as all the different varieties of cars attached to the one train. This one was real, the type of train he'd boarded back in NYC. Maybe he should just go ahead and forget the ceaseless need to meander around the damn thing and consider that sleep after all. Except for the fact that he was a long way from the sleeper he'd reserved. Maybe a bit of a nap here couldn't hurt. The seat seemed comfortable enough. The train pulled to a stop, sudden, unexpected, no preemptive warning. It didn't grind to a screeching halt. It didn't clatter with a noisy entourage of sound. It didn't judder and shudder and slam people around in their chairs. It just glided smoothly to a standstill. Sloane's transitory somnolent state was immediately shaken off, and he straightened in his seat, perked up now with curiosity. A station? Whereabouts were they now? He slid across from the aisle seat where he'd landed himself, pressing up to a window, his face squeezing against the glass in an effort to see out and perhaps catch a glimpse of something indicating where they might be. Oddly, it was pitch black out there. It was like gazing down into the unbroken waters of a still lake, catching nothing but his own reflection. Cupping his hands around his face in a frame and peering intently out offered him no more success. It remained impenetrable out there, as if there were simply no forms of illumination present, or the goddamn windows were intentionally mirrored to prevent the passengers from seeing out. Again, Sloane shook his head. That was just about as illogical as the chained-up, subdued passengers in the subway car. He scooted across to the aisle seat again, wondering if any of the folks assembled in here with him were rising up to exit the train. As he did, he heard the doors open. It didn't appear as though any of his current companions were getting up to leave, but people were coming aboard in a rush. A filthy, feral flood of horrific humanity. A gibbering lunatic brigade of grime-encrusted, wild-eyed, transient folk, clad in a grotesque array of mismatched outfits, dirty, stained overcoats, shapeless dresses, things that might have been fashioned from Hessian sacks. They came with rolling, crazy eyes and gaping mouths exposing rotten rows of broken teeth or blackened stumps, lolling tongues, their lurching, stumbling charge, soundtracked by an insane perpetual ululation of laughter, both eerie and high-pitched, mingling with low, throaty chuckles and witch-like cackles. Their dirty hands, some encased in soot-marked or grime-streaked gloves, were laden with an assortment of terrifying implements. Straight razors, knives, busted glass bottles, screwdrivers, claw hammers, long shards of glass and metal, wrapped in electrical tape to create makeshift handles. They stampeded inside the train in a torrent of twisted fury, a deluge of foul-smelling horror, like a stream of excrement jetting from a busted sewer pipe, and they stormed the carriage where Sloane and his co-travelers currently resided. In twos and threes, they launched themselves upon the passengers in the front row of seats, stabbing and thrusting with ferocious motions of their wielded weapons, gouging out eyes with knife blades, plunging glass spikes into throats, delighting in the hot rain of blood that ensued. From his position in the rear of the carriage, Sloane witnessed a giant behemoth of a man, his visage virtually obscured by so much bristling beard it looked like he had a porcupine embedded in the lower half of his face. The giant punched what he guessed was an ice pick into the forehead of a woman in a business suit with such force that the cranial bone presented no obstacle whatsoever. The weapon disappeared in a welter of blood, a gruesome cracking sound emanating among screams, yells, and the hideous medley of laughter swelling from the pack of demented attackers. Alongside him danced a rake-thin woman with a terrible shock of stiff hair that looked as though she styled it by jamming the knife she was wielding into a live electrical socket, her face already splashed with blood, a thick wool sweater virtually swimming on her. She stabbed gleefully with the blade, driving the point into the flesh of any passenger she could get it near, bringing her maniacal face close every time she punctured something that sprayed blood. There were more, too. So many more hideous hooting freaks in ill-fitting unwashed clothes, brandishing all manner of death-dealing implements, storming down the aisle, cutting, slashing, slicing, killing. They chased down those who attempted to run, barreling after them with slashing instruments until the aisles ran red with rivers of blood. Sloane hadn't waited to witness more. Once the gore started to cloud the air with a mist so thick it was like staring through blood-tinted glasses, he was out of his seat and running. He went for the door down his end of the carriage, but it slipped shut as his grasping fingers reached desperately to snatch at it and forcibly keep it open, his despairing reflection mocking him in the glass. The train pulled away from whatever hellish station of homeless hobo mutants the stop had been, smoother than ever with its return to pace, sweeping back on its journey. Into the next carriage, Stone thundered, tripping, stumbling and sprawling headlong down the aisle of the subway carriage. He hadn't been hallucinating. He was back in that same carriage, with its proliferating of helping homeless slogans and training the unfortunate stickers. All the chained passengers were dead. Shit, maybe they'd always been dead. Perhaps the hallucinatory bit had been the guy actually responding to his inquiry. He crawled now, dragging himself all the way down the length of the aisle, slipping in blood that streamed in rivulets from torn flesh, slashed throats, mutilated passengers. His hands were tacky with the sanguinary mess that pooled all over the floor, his knees saturated in red. But he continued to haul himself towards the end. Towards what? He didn't know. Maybe the abandoned boxcar would be his best bet. Surely there was nothing to interest these bestial beggars in there. There was nobody to slaughter in there. A pair of feet in black high heels appeared before him, incongruous and out of place atop the red river that sluiced around them. He stared in a mesmerized fugue, realizing the feet were attached to legs, and slowly moved his disbelieving eyes all the way up them, up to where they met the hemline of a demure, no-nonsense skirt, also black. Further up, to where a blouse covered an upper torso, again black in color, pushing out moderately where a pair of breasts obviously existed. Then, above that, a woman's face, framed by waves of blonde hair, a mixture of amusement and a mild interest tempering her expression. She gazed placidly down at his blood-soaked figure, seeming wholly unperturbed by the fact that this entire carriage was full of deceased passengers, and the one he'd just escaped from was loaded with a rampart flock of bloodthirsty beggars who'd just slaughtered every living soul in their trajectory, and could well be coming in here any moment. "Mr. Sloane," she spoke softly, that amusement on her face lending its inflection to her voice as well. You know my name?" Sloane gasped. "Am I high? Hallucinating? Is this a fucking nightmare?" "No, to all of the above, except for possibly the fact of you being high. There's probably a strong possibility of that, but in any event, what you're witnessing is all very real, Mr. Sloane. And, of course, I know who you are. Do you think it's just a mere coincidence that you're on this train?" "I don't..." "What? People like you are ideal for the Training the Unfortunate program," the woman continued. "Tell me, Mr. Sloane, what have you ever done for the homeless, the less fortunate, the desperate beggars of the world? anything other than torturing them, or beating them for daring to ask for a little slice of your drug money to get a bite to eat. No? Nothing? You haven't ever had to grovel for food or warm clothes. You take what you want, and that includes other lives. So, like I said, you are the ideal candidate to finally do something worthy with yourself. You and everybody else on this train are the unfortunates, selected to assist with the incentive to help the homeless feed and clothe themselves. Why the hell would you consider I would want to help with that? No fucking chance, lady. You're insane. I'm on this train out of my own volition. Just seems to be full of filthy, murderous bums and dead people. I'm not helping you shit. Oh, but you are helping. Or you soon will be. As for your own free will, we shall see. You needed a train out of the city, far away, and that was provided for you. This train. The vehicle that carries the unfortunates from station to station in order to achieve the aims of the initiative. What aims? You talking riddles, bitch. Maybe you're high too. The blonde woman plastered a smile across her countenance, a bright one, but an expression that never reached her slate-gray eyes. Oh, it is very simple, really. It's all in the slogan. Every station we stop at along the way is not to allow travelers off, but to enable them access to the train. Each group that boards the train has its own directives, its own specific mission to help themselves to what they require, food and clothing. The train itself, as you will have noticed in your random amblings throughout, is broken up into very different carriages, some for passengers, and some for nullified passengers. And we have boxcars for storage of the appropriate clothing. And, of course, we have refrigeration cars to store the consumables en route to the final destination. I still don't follow. You aren't worried about these fucking hobo nutters hacking up passengers? What are you... Then it dawned on Sloane. Finally. Horribly. Think of it as a cattle train en route to the abattoir. The woman smiled with an expression of a predator sizing up prey. Perhaps, more appropriately, we have a slaughterhouse in perpetual motion. All operations remain on the train. All proceeds go to those who most need it at the end of the road. Moreover, people like you and your kind, assembled here to assist with the initiative, shall go unmissed. It's all for the greater good. So, Mr. Sloane, thank you for your important participation in this program. I must be on my way to monitor the progress of the other activities. Slithering in the sticky mess, spreading and coagulating on the floor of the train, Sloane attempted to find his feet and snatched at her with his bloody fingers. What the hell? He hollered as she made to step around him. You crazy fucking bitch. As he managed to turn himself around, people emerged from the slaughterhouse carriage. The giant man, the freaky lady with the Einstein hair, others. They weren't clad in their filthy vagrant clothes anymore. They wore suits, fancy dresses, dinner jackets, like those his former co-travelers had worn. He screamed and screamed himself hoarse, until the blood-slick blade of a serrated knife punched through his throat and turned his sounds of terror into the choking gargles of death.
Don't you just love a story with a moral? Especially the deadly kind. Her palm weaves horror, oh, so delicately. Devilishly so. A very special evening train, whose travelers have but one destination. Which reads, Dumb Fox, the Morpheus Special.
Ticket, please. The Morpheus Special by Donna Fox. From verity to vision, come join the pale riders, the mute shades of gypsies, evil eyes, and ancient lips. Wan tramps and blue vagabonds, all past, no future. Gullet white children with hungry fish eyes, slim grasping fingers, dark, moist smell of fresh earth. We shall not linger. The grim rattler waits. Pale rolling stock, sullen vistas to explore. Your little sleeper boasts pale sheets of deception. Soft blankets of conceit. Great illusions plump your pillow. Nestle down. I will warm you with a blue velvet tour. Hesitate, you'll miss the final summons, and go devil to catch my tail before the daybreak sounds, and the flyer turns to dust.
Yes, our guests have taken their permanent seats. From New York to time infinite. Are you ready to join them? Perhaps another story will lure you. Choose a car, any car. For the time we had a permanent guest. They tell their tales of horror at its best. Come, yes, join me. My name is Terror. Who rides the rails eternally upon the terror train?
Survived this trek? No turning back. Dare resist, just try. Step back inside, we'll be your guide. So many ways to die. Upon this ride, nowhere to hide. With us, you shall remain. Upon this ride, this hellish ride, we call the Terror Train.
Terror Train Podcast, Episode 110, New York to Memphis. Produced by Krista Clark Grabowski, David Schutz II, and Mary Genevieve Fortier. Podcast directed and arranged by David Schutz II. The conductor, your narrator, was created by and played by David Schutz II. Terror, the disembodied voice, was created by and played by Mary Genevieve Fortier. Terror Train Podcast opening and closing poems written by Mary Genevieve Fortier. Host segment dialogue for Terror, the disembodied voice, written by Mary Genevieve Fortier. Production music, The House of Leaves, Chase Pulse, The Hive, and The Voices by Kevin MacLeod and Compitech.com. Featured works, Training the Unfortunate, written by Jim Goforth. Production music, Decisions, Bicycle, Colorless Aura, Blue Sizzle, Echoes of Time, Inner Sanctum, Veins, Measured Paces, Controlled Chaos, Unnatural Situation, Trepidation, Return of Lazarus, and Bent and Broken by Kevin MacLeod, Incompetech.com. The Morpheus Special, written by Donna Fox. Production music, Night of Chaos by Kevin MacLeod, Incompetech.com. Additional sound effects by Audiosoundclips.com. Podcast program edited by David Schutz II. The stories and poems presented in the Terror Train podcasts are all featured in the James Ward Kirk Publishing anthology, Terror Train, which was edited by Krista Clark Grabowski and A. Henry Keene. Cover art by Stephen Cooney. Content copyright 2014. Terror Train, Podcast Episode 110, New York to Memphis. Copyright 2014.